All right, good morning, everybody. This is Dave Rubin, and I'm thankful that everybody is able to join us this morning. I want to welcome everyone during this extraordinary time. I'm hoping everyone is keeping safe and sheltered and ready to participate this morning. I think we're going to make a little bit of change to our schedule. I'll talk about that in a second. But before we do, let me have Ms. Cowan take our official roll call. Ms. Cowan.
Thank you. Judge Rubin.
Here.
Judge Mormon.
Present.
Judge Botke. Justice Fujisaki.
Here.
Justice Hill.
Here.
Judge Hott.
Here.
Mr. Roddy.
Here. Here.
And Ms. Wallen-Roman. Thank you.
Here.
Ms. Wallen-Roman.
Here.
Great.
And I just want to say that Judge Botke is on the phone. He's texting me. I can't hear him, but he can hear us.
Okay.
Then he's telling us to go ahead, and I'm going to invite him to call to check the dial-in number again, and maybe call it. He may have called in on the listen-only line. So just a reminder to our members and everyone who will be participating today that the meeting is open to the public. We are recording the meeting, as you've already heard. We have invited members of the public to join us, and they can do so on our listen-only conference line. Judge Botke? No. So we're going to talk a little bit about the ground rules for a meeting of this size and how we're going to do it by phone in a second. But to start with this, the usual, since so many people are listening in, that if you could identify yourselves before you spoke, that would be great. That would be great. And then just a reminder that it's okay to put us on mute. It's not okay to put us on hold. Unless you've got that new jazz hold music, and I really don't mind it, but in general, just put us on mute. All right, so here's the change to our lineup today. We are going to defer until our May meeting approval of minutes. We want to get that a little bit more tacked down, so we're not going to do the minutes. And in terms of public comment, if you're thinking about how we're going to handle that, I just wanted to say that in a telephonic meeting, the rules are that public comment has to come in writing. So as I understand it, we didn't have any written public comment today. So what I want to do what I want to do today instead of starting and having a conversation about the minute is I wanted, given the situation in which we find ourselves, I thought it might be beneficial to have Mr. Wardlaw and Mr. Theodorovic talk to us a little bit about kind of the current budget climate as they perceive it. I know that Mr. Theodorovic and I and Mr. Wardlaw were listening in, but there were two budget hearings over the last 7 days. And just kind of tell us their take on it especially as we proceed into the budget change concept. So unless there's an objection, what I'll do is after they are done, I'm going to go around the room. I'll call on each of you individually in alphabetical order to see if you have any questions for them, because I obviously can't see you raising your hand. So we'll see if that works throughout the morning. With that, let me throw this open to Mr. Wardlaw and Mr. Theodorovic.
Okay, thank you, Judge, and committee members. This is John Wardlaw. I thought I'd provide just a brief overview of the state revenue and expenditure picture as we're hearing and seeing from our friends within the executive branch, the legislative analyst office, and the legislature. So as Judge Rubin identified, the legislature has had several hearings in the last week concerning the COVID-19 response and touch on some of the economic factors that are playing out right now. No surprise, all financial markets are significantly down. Revenues are down across the board. And so all parties are indicating that the June budget, which they will have a June budget passed, but that's very likely looking more and more like a baseline budget or workload budget. So many of the things that we saw at the January point when the governor proposed his spending plan for the next fiscal year had a lot of new policy and growth in it based on economic projections that were quite healthy. Given the COVID-19 downturn, we expect that the May revise, which the governor will be proposing mid-May, will have much of that stripped out. The priorities appear to be obviously COVID-19funding. There will be wildfire dollars contained for this coming fire season, as well as homelessness are the three areas that the administration and the legislature have signaled continue to be high priorities. But beyond that, we're fully expecting that this June budget will be a much refined down baseline budget coming forward. With that, as we all know, tax season has been deferred from April to July this year. And typically what happens in April as the tax filings are coming in, the administration is looking and identifying how much they have available for spending in the next fiscal year. And that's where the May revise becomes such an important point, because it's when the legislature gets its opportunity to see how much is available for spending, and then they wrap up the budget by June. This year, with the deferral of tax season to July, they will have, as I mentioned, a baseline budget passed in June, and then they will again revisit the budget in the August timeframe. They're calling it the August revise. So July will be the moment where the administration is looking and identifying what projections they have for that fiscal year. We all expect they're going to be down and potentially significantly down. And then the legislature will convene another budget package that potentially, and all signals that they're providing through the legislature is, if the markets continue to be on a downward projection, that there will be proposed cuts in that budget. So I think it would be prudent for us as a branch to be really thoughtfully considering the proposals, the concepts that you have for consideration given the economic climate we're in. So with that, I would like to spend just another minute talking high level about how the revenues play on a statewide basis and then the big expenditure programs. And so with that, on the revenue side of the ledger, you have really three powerhouse tax structures that bring in and feed the state general fund. So the biggest being personal income tax. That's about 67% of the state's general fund comes from that source, personal income tax. Next up is sales and use tax at about 18%. And then you have corporate taxes coming in at about just over 10%. So personal income tax, sales tax, corporate taxes are the primary streams of money coming into the state. On the expenditure side, you have really three areas that consume the majority of the state general fund. And so you have human services coming in at about 11%. You have health coming in at just under 21% of the state's general fund, and then K through 12 education at coming in just under 28%. And so those are the main players when it comes to consumption of state general fund. When you talk about the judiciary, we consume just under 1.5% of the state's general fund. We're not a big player in state general fund. So when you start looking at cuts, generally, it's the folks that consume state general fund that in bad times play pretty heavy in the reduction side. Now, understanding that we have a international health crisis on our hands, and I just mentioned that just under 21% of the state general fund is health related. There are lots of programs out there that are beyond COVID response. And so I would expect that there are a lot of programs that would still participate should the administration and legislature have to move in the direction of cuts. We should, I think, be bracing ourselves for some level of involvement, though. If the markets continue to be down, it's likely that we would have some level of reduction facing the branch. I will also remind you that during the Great Recession, this branch had had accumulated quite a reserve. That reserve doesn't exist today. You know, that money was swept. Although we've had a lot of restorations as far as trial court operations, we don't have a large pool of dollars that would be available discretionary nature. And so in my early conversations with the Department of Finance, they clearly recognize the state of the judiciary is different than it was during the Great Recession. So with that, I'll take a pause, see if there are any questions, and then hand over to Zlatko for final words. Questions?
All right. Let me go around the room and see if you have questions. So first, Judge Moorman, any questions for Mr. Wardlaw?
Not at this time.
Thank you. And Judge Bakke, we can't hear you, but if you want to text me a question, why don't you get that going?
Let me
move on to Justice.
Can you hear me
Bakke.
Now?
Oh, you're there. Yes, Judge Bakke, any questions for for Mr. Wardlaw? All right,
no,
Justice Fujisaki.
Thank you. No.
All right, Justice Hill.
No, thank you.
All right, Judge Hopp.
Yeah, John, I should know the answer to this, but I remember there was some discussion of increasing the amount that a trial court could keep in reserve and shift from one budget year to the next. Could you remind us where we currently stand on that?
Yes, Judge Hopp. So with respect to retaining funds, we had a 1% cap on our funds. That was changed up to a 3% cap.
So if there were a trial court that was trying to conserve some money from the current budget year and save it for next year, they could carry over 3%, right?
That is correct, Judge. And we also have our process called funds held on behalf. That's if a court has a reserve that wishes to use for specific purposes, can come to the Judicial Council and request those dollars to be saved as well.
Great. Thank you for reminding
Absolutely.
Me.
Sure.
All right. Thank you, Judge, for that question. Mr. Roddy.
No questions. Thank you.
All right. And Ms. Wallen-Roman?
Nope. I'm good right now. Thank you.
All right. Very well. All right. Thank you, Mr. Wardlaw. I don't have any questions either. Thank you for that explanation. I think I have a question, which I'll ask maybe a little bit later, more apropos to the actual BCC. Let me then go to Mr. Theodorovich for kind of closing or other remarks on this.
Great. Thank you. Thank you, Judge Rubin and members of the JBBC. I think John did a great job of sort of laying out the situation from a sort of going forward perspective. I think as we think about what it is that is a baseline budget, there's really not a definition that provides for program expansion or new programs. Those are usually, reserved for times when there are, new resources and new general fund available for those types of governmental expenditures. You know, there's going to be many, many meritorious ideas that we will be discussing, throughout this spring. And it's not to say that because something may not stay, it's not because it's not warranted, but it's or needed, but it just doesn't fit the definitions that we are currently living under in terms of budget preparation. And so I think it is an understanding, John and I and Fran, we've spent time at Department of Finance when there were budget reductions happening in difficult budget times. And I think it was, sort of look at what kind of proposals were coming forward from departments. And I think it was important that it's recognized by the requesting entity. They also understand and realize the difficult budget building period we're in. And so looking to limit those to the only most critical issues will be something that I think is important for us as a branch to do, given that we'd have limited advocacy for anything from a new funding standpoint. So, the recessionary discussions that were happening in the budget hearings, the 2 and 3 year periods of difficulty, the level of a potential general fund reduction, and how far the state's rainy day fund can cover. It's not going to be a period where there'll be opportunities for program expansion. So, looking at baseline budgets, they are very lean and not ones which you are looking to expand service, but rather do your best to maintain your service levels with the resources that are appropriated to the branch. And so I really think we need to think about that as we do our business today, is what kind of message are we sending to the administration and the legislature when we consider the kinds of proposals in this environment. And that's kind of my history and our history on these issues and how important it is to really think about the message we're sending when we're making requests through the budget process. And that concludes my comments.
Thank you, Mr. Theodorovich. Let me see if there are any questions for you. Judge Moorman?
Not at this time. Thank you.
All right, Judge Bakke?
No, sir. Thank you.
All right, Justice Fujisaki?
Thank you, Zacko. No questions now.
All right, Justice Hill?
Not at this time. Thanks.
Judge Ha?
No, thanks.
Mr. Roddy?
No, thank you.
And Ms. Wallen-Roman?
Nope, I'm good right now. Thank you.
All right, I guess I have two questions. The first one is, you mentioned Ms. Mueller. Is she here? Does she want to say anything? I didn't mean to ignore her.
Good morning, Judge Rubin. I'm here. No, I have nothing to add. I think Mr. Wardlaw and Bucko covered all of the important issues. Thank you.
All right, and thank you for being here this morning.
Thank you.
And then I guess my question then is to all three of you, which is this. When we talk about sending a message, like how we approach this and being sensitive to the situation and maybe approaching it a little bit differently, how might that look from our perspective? Does that mean where we might have in the past called the list down to, say, out of 24, maybe called the list down to 10 or 12? Does that mean going further? Does it mean staying the same number but changing the nature of them? Maybe if you could give us a little more direction there. And let me start with Mr. Wardlaw.
Thank you, Judge. So with respect to the budget concept, as Zlatko identified, it will be a relatively high bar going forward. So only the most critical items, I think, at this point should be considered for advancement on, given the current financial situation.
All right, Mr. Woodlaw. Mr. Theodorovich.
I agree. We have to understand the environment. I think high bar is the right expectation, and only the most critical absolute needs.
Right. And then Ms. Mueller, anything to add?
No, I agree. You know, the administration, the LAO, they're looking at essentially kind of like holding firm on critical services right now, baseline budget. So that's going to be the initial lens.
Right. And it seems like, see if I'm understanding what you're saying. It seems, the three were saying, it seems like even though we are working on 21/22, right now, the fact is everything's about a year delayed anyway, because like when tax receipts are down, it takes a year or two for us to recover. Is that right?
Yeah, Judge Rubin, this is John Wardlaw again, and the state's financial experts during recent hearings identified that they're expecting this is a 2 to 3 year impact. There are voices out there that say there'll be a fairly quick turnaround, but generally what we are hearing and expecting is a multiple budget cycle recession period coming at us.
Right. It seemed like what I got from the budget hearings is, at least from the DOF side, like we don't know what this recovery is going to look like. In other words, did you read the materials out there? There's a V-shaped recovery, there's a W-shaped recovery, there's a U-shaped recovery, and there's an L-shaped recovery, with the most pessimistic being L-shaped and the most optimistic being V-shaped. Is that about right?
Yeah, that's correct, Judge.
Okay, great. Any questions based on that, Judge Moorman?
No, thank you.
Baki?
No questions.
Justice Fujisaki?
No, thank you.
Justice Hill?
No, thank you.
Judge Ha?
No, thanks.
Mr. Roddy?
Nope.
And Ms. Wallen-Roman?
Nope, good here. Thank you.
All right, outstanding. All right, so, well, there's no delaying it. We have to kind of get into it now. So this year is the first year that we've modified our approach. So what we would like to do today, and we have many presenters with us today, is the presenters are here to kind of help educate us any questions we might have about specific budget change concepts, obviously based on what Mr. Wardlaw, Mr. Theodorovic, and Ms. Mueller have shared with us. We probably need to cut a lot more deeply than we had anticipated. But in any event, they're here to answer questions. And then when they're done, we will deliberate and try to figure out which ones go forward, if any. So with that, I guess we begin. Do you all have the we'll do the first six together. Those are Ms. Speed with 21-01 through 21-05, and then we have Ms. Pettit on 21-06. They seem to be kind of the appellate matters grouped. So with that, Ms. Speed, are you there?
I am here, Judge Rubin.
Let's assume everyone sort of read the high-level stuff, and if there's any, just maybe a couple of minutes you want to take on each of them, that'd be great.
Sure.
I'll open up to questions.
Sure. So I will just start with 2101. This is a placeholder for the 6th District Court of Appeal rent increase or relocation. The 6th District is in Santa Clara County, located in downtown San Jose. They're facing a rent increase of basically $1.65 million, more than double their current rent, and that's even if they stay in the same location or they relocate, they're facing those same costs given the location in the Silicon Valley and even discussing with facilities, even with sort of the economy as it is, they're still facing a pretty significant increase, more than is just absorbable by their existing budget. So that is 2101.
All right, let me go around the room for questions. Judge Moorman.
Yes, thank you. So given the fact you just said that, I guess the landscape in terms of rent increases isn't changing in light of the pandemic?
That's what we understand from our facility staff. I'm not sure if Mike Courtney's on the line, but when we were discussing internally last week, he said he still expected a very similar increase despite sort of the downturn right now.
Okay, thank you.
And Judge Rubin, this is John Wardlaw. Just for context, I think it might be helpful that with respect to the appellate court trust fund, the projected balance the next fiscal year is just about $24 million, and that is a source that the Department of Finance has been watching that fund grow. I think it would absolutely rent needs to be covered, but that could be a viable source to look to rather than the state general fund. Just wanted to offer that up.
Thank you, Mr. Wardlaw. And I guess what I heard you and Zlatko and Ms. Mueller say, you didn't say it this way, but to be a little more blunt, was like, we don't want to walk into DOF completely tone deaf to what's happening, and we need to be aware when we do have these sources of money that they've already identified in terms of preserving our credibility and moving forward. So, all right. Judge Bakke?
No questions. Thank you.
Justice Fujisaki?
Yeah, just one quick question. So I'm looking at Section D where it says that the APJC has approved the request, but no other additional advisory bodies or judicial council approval is required. So do we, what does that mean for our voting on it?
That was for the BCC to be submitted, Justice Fujisaki.
Okay. Thank you.
All right.
David, this is Brad. I have a quick question.
Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. John, this would be directed to you on this particular one. If we, and I know Justice Greenwood is concerned about this, but in fact, she looks outside her window and sees the Zoom building and knows, I mean, she's in real estate that will be taken over by other tech companies up there. If we absorb the rents 1 year, does that set a precedent that all rental increases in ongoing years would be absorbed, or what would we be telling Justice Greenwood and the others if we don't build it into a BCP this time?
Thank you, Justice Hill. That's a great question. And so with respect to use of the appellate court trust fund, no, I don't think it would set a precedent in that there's always the opportunity to go and request funds of the state general fund. To the extent, though, that we have fund sources available to us, Department of Finance, the administration, legislature, they always have the discretion to say, you know, use that source rather than another. I think we'd have a very good business case should we not have available funds in the future to still be able to access general fund for critical expenditures such as rent increases.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep.
All right, Judge Hopp.
No questions.
All right, Mr. Roddy.
No questions. Thank you.
And Ms. Wallen-Roman.
No questions. Thank you.
All right. And in the interest of learning as I go how to conduct one of these phone meetings, I think what we'll do is if everyone can take notes, what I'll do is we'll do this in groups by presenters, and at the end of the group, I'll ask for questions for any of the BCCs about which they spoke, and that'll keep us more, I think, on schedule. All right. With that, Ms. Speed, if you could kind of run down 2, 3, 4, and 5, maybe a couple sentences on each.
Yep. 2102 is a request for $1.537 million general fund for 7 necessary CHP positions for the Judicial Protection Unit to serve the at 7 courthouses, the Supreme Court, and the 6 appellate districts. This has been coordinated with the Judicial Protection Office of CHP.
Great. And number 3?
2103 is $5.087 million to provide a $12 hourly rate increase for the court-appointed counsel panel attorneys. Current appointment rates, depending on the case type, range from $95 to a maximum of $115. This $12 increase will raise that to $107 with a maximum of $127. The amount is in line with increases in the consumer price index. The last time there was an increase in their hourly rate was in 2016.
2104.
2104 is Appellate Court Libraries Electronic Resources and Collection. It is $682,000 to support increased costs for updating and acquiring print collections that are unavailable in non-print format and for increases in costs related to electronic legal research resources. This is increase in costs for the Lexis and Westlaw contracts.
All right. And number 5.
2105 is the estimated cost related to Proposition 66 in the appellate court. It covers roughly 14.5 positions and is for fiscal year 21-22 is about $9 million. This covers the cost of internal positions at the courts of appeals, the cost of appointed counsel, at the 145 hourly rate, which is currently paid out of the, what the Supreme Court pays for death penalty cases, capital cases, investigations, and other related costs to implementation of Proposition 66 at the appellate court.
All right, thank you. And Ms. Pettit, you're there, number 6.
Yes, this particular piece is to really do the modernization of the Courts of Appeal and Supreme Court in their technology stacks. Currently, they are supported in by the JCIT, as well as a small core of staff who are able to support their technology needs. We did an assessment on what it would take for them to go to the digital court, and there is several things that they would need to do to achieve the digital court that we are in line with what the trial courts are heading, including, you know, online access, assembly, TAP assembly program. However, if this is something that we did not fund today, it would be more or less status quo, and they would be kind of continuing along the very slow progress of moving to the digital court.
All right, thank you. So let's go around and on this first group, or the remaining of this first group, that is 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6, see if there's any questions. And let me start then with Judge Borman. Any questions on any of them?
I have one question on, I guess it's 05, the Prop 66 related request. And I'm very cognizant of the overall message coming from Mr. Wardlaw and Mr. And Zlatko about the message, but I just have a question. Is there a way to revise this request to reduce it? I mean, does it have to be a 14 and a half positions, for example?
Justice Hill can feel free to kick in here as well, but we had estimated the most reasonable estimates of the workload based on the workload that the Supreme Court currently or was using for capital cases prior to. Of course, it could be looked at being adjusted. Justice Hill, did you have anything to add?
You know, I that number was based on a working group chaired by Justice, I think, was this Justice, not Greenwood, this was Justice Humes's working group. And
this was Justice Humes.
They spent a lot of time. Yeah, and they spent a great deal of time and effort, and they were actually lower than a lot of people thought they should be, but they didn't want to ask for more money. So I think, you know, obviously that is, as some have described, a tsunami that is headed toward the Court of Appeal, Courts of Appeal. I don't know whether at some point, you know, some fraction of that would help. But, you know, obviously we're in pretty uncertain times. Is that my exit music?
No, really, I didn't mean to play you off.
Dave Rubin, you know, is that like the Academy Awards where I'm kind of,
yeah,
the music starts? And...
Right, I was playing you off. No, if I just remind everybody, I apologize. I apologize, Justice Hill. I just want to remind everybody, do not put us on hold because we get your hold music.
Yeah, I apologize. That was Judge Hopp. I didn't realize I was putting the phone on hold by hitting another line, and that's totally my fault. I apologize.
Okay. Yes.
I have just one other question on that I would direct to John and Slacco. John and Slacco. Is this something that, given the fact that we know it's coming, we know it's that tsunami, is it something that we would keep in the mix and say, we understand that you probably don't have money, but we just want to have it still in the mix because it's something that's hitting us? Or do you think it's better not to even have it on the table?
Justice Hill, this is John Wardlaw. Now, my recommendation would be, you know, this is a workload item. It's real. And my suggestion would be that this, beyond the very strong potential for moving forward list, because of the nature of it and whether or not we ultimately get funding for it, I think the branch needs to be signaling that this is a substantive workload item that needs to be on the radar.
Okay. Thank you.
All right, and then Ms. Judge Moorman, you had, I think, other questions?
No, I just think this is a very important item. So, no, that question was answered. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Judge Barkey.
This is just a question for Heather Pettit. Heather, I assume with regard to 21-06, the expenditures for the IT modernization will ultimately save money in the long run by the Supreme Court and the Courts of Appeal going in that direction. Is that correct?
That is correct. It will save money in the long run.
Okay. Thank you. That's all I had.
Thank you. Justice Fujisaki?
Yeah, I have a couple of questions. One, going back to 05 and Prop 66. So this is limited to Court of Appeal funding. What is the status of where the trial courts are? Because I would think that the tsunami is going to hit the trial courts first.
This is Laura. So we have the Proposition 66 working group that the chief put together that does have trial court, both judges, PJs, and court executive officers. We don't yet have an estimate for trial courts because it's hitting them at very different rates and their ability to take the impact, it varies from court to court. A very small court could need a lot more help than a very large court. So that's part of the discussions in the Proposition 66 working group. We were well underway on discussions and recommendations in Prop 66. However, given the pandemic, that's sort of been put on hold, so we hope to resume that shortly.
Judge Rubin, if I may, this is John Wardlaw again. We do,
sure,
with respect to Prop 66, my suggestion would be that as we continue to develop a BCP, should this body clear this for development of a BCP, that we would, to the extent possible, consider the impacts on the trial courts as well, and that we would have a single BCP tied to Prop 66 moving forward that takes into account both the appellate and the superior courts as one package, to the extent that we can get the information available during the summer months Ultimately, you know, the judicial council would be considering this in July and then off to finance in September. So we'd work both trial court as the appellate court to get a comprehensive package together.
All right. That sounds like a great thought. Justice Fujisaki, did you have anything? Keep going.
Yeah, I have a couple more questions on 03, which is the cap increase, hourly increase. It seems to me that the problems that are being presented in the cap program are more immediate because of all of the initiatives and propositions that have been passed, plus the reform efforts and such. I'm just curious as to, maybe Laura could answer this, kind of what the immediacy of 03 versus 05 in terms of what, you know, what ought to be funded, what should have priority? Do you have an opinion?
That's a tricky one. For 03, we are having issues, of course, with all the propositions, more work for appointed counsel. We're getting less people applying for appointed counsel. This increases their rates so that they can take those, or that they'll continue to take those appellate cases. 05,
right.
As far as it relates to appointed counsel, the one thing in 05 that we do need is that the Supreme Court is currently authorized to pay $145 an hour for capital cases. The appellate courts don't have that authorization or funding. So 05 would handle that piece of it related to Proposition 66 and capital cases. The immediacy, it's a tricky one. I would ask perhaps Justice Hill to weigh in on the immediacy need. I think the recruitment problem continues, and even with an hourly rate increase, and there's currently, or at least in the January budget, there was a 5% increase for the project contract. We don't know what's going to happen with that either.
And I agree with Laura. It's a difficult one, and I would just defer to John and Slotko on that. If they think that that those two would be better left later in some form to roll it out, because right now it's just not even a starter to a conversation, I would be certainly fine with that.
And Justice Hill, this is John again. That would be my suggestion, is there are many proposals that will be considered that are meritorious, and should the economic climate improve, should definitely be given consideration for moving forward at that time. But given the signals we're getting on the financial markets, my suggestion would be those be placed on the hold.
And one final question on that. Justice Fujisaki, were you finished?
I was going to go on to one other question on another matter, but if you want to, this has to, please go ahead.
No, you go ahead, and I had a question on the tech one, so go right ahead.
Good, Justice Fujisaki.
Okay, actually, the next one, I wanted to get your input, Justice Hill. On 02, the court security. You're in the APJs, right? So how do the APJs feel about the court security issue?
I think, you know, they all realize that in the long term we need this particular one, because some of the outlying courts just have one officer. But this is one item as well that will have to be deferred, in my opinion. I think all of the APJs would agree with that. We'd like to have it. We think it's necessary in the long term, but not now.
Great. Thank you. And that's it.
Thank you, Justice Fujisaki. Justice Hill.
Again, I want to ask John and Slotko for their assessment on the technology side. Obviously, courts across the state have found that they are in desperate need of good technology to run their courts remotely. Many of us have been fortunate to have somewhat what we need, but in terms of electronic transcripts and records and other things to run a court, we may not have the resources that we need. If, depending on what Heather thinks and you think, John, is this an area that might have some traction with DOS, given that we could have a flare-up again at some point in the future, and we want our courts to be technologically able to deal with whatever crisis might be coming?
Justice Hill, thank you. Again, this is John. And as you'll recall, in the governor's proposed budget in January, we had a number of IT proposals, and clearly the governor is very supportive of technology and advancements. He included it as a priority in his budget. That said, we have been given signals that all of those discretionary items are being pulled out. I don't expect to see them at the May revise point. I may be surprised, but I'm quite confident that most of that will be stripped out. And so given that signal, unless we're looking at potential IT challenges with respect to being able to do core business, if we have things that meet that threshold, that if we don't do, we are significantly compromised in our ability to perform our core function. Absent that, I don't see get much traction with the administration given the economic climate we're in. Now, I would encourage, though, to the extent that we have fund sources such as the Appellate Court Trust Fund that have relatively healthy reserves, that we as a court family should be considering tapping that fund source rather than going and asking for general fund.
Great. Thank you, John. That's the answer we need.
Sure.
Yeah. Justice Hill, this is Judge Fossey. On behalf of JCPC, we are looking at that with Heather and Lotko and John as far as how technology has been thrown to the forefront of the courts by this unfortunate pandemic, and that's something that is happening in an ongoing manner every single day, and it will get addressed, obviously, going forward.
Great. Thank you so much.
And this was Lotko. I was just going to add that in prior history with IT, the only issues that John sort of suggested was system failures were oftentimes the critical issue rather than any enhancements. But as Judge Bakhtia said, you know, we are looking at different ways. So just understand that the lens has often been with IT is, are your systems capable of continuing? The only concern is risk of failure, where there might have been even a consideration for IT investment to maintain a system rather than thoughts of enhancements.
Thank you. Sandra.
Yeah. So this is Andrea, and I would only add to that I would hate for us to get to a failure to decide we should fund it. And so I think, you know, to Judge Bakke's point, the JCTC is really looking at these, Vodka, from that perspective of, you know, what's really critical now and what's critical given the state of affairs that we're in and kind of what has risen to the surface as more critical that maybe we weren't thinking was that critical before. Because I, you know, my goal is to keep the appellate courts and the trial courts as a whole away from being in a state of failure and then deciding we have a problem.
Andrea, this is John Wardlaw, and I completely agree with that 100%. And, you know, given we have the Appellate Court Trust Fund that has a healthy balance in it, my suggestion is that the court family consider that as an alternative fund source until the economy improves and continue to do the good work that we need to in IT and advance our ability to function. We should not be, you know, running to failure and then, making the ask. we should do the, I think, the right thing, which is to continue to move forward our technology. But given the state's climate, knocking on the general fund door, I don't think we'll get much traction.
All right, thank you. Hold on a second. Josh Hopp.
Yeah, this is for Zlatko, John, the folks with far more appellate knowledge than I do. But is there some degree to which the Supreme Court's workload is being reduced by the Prop 56 shift to the trial courts and courts of appeal? And are we how would we respond if DOF said, well, I understand you need new money for the courts of appeal or trial courts, but shouldn't we offset that at least to some degree by the allocation for the Supreme Court?
Judge, thank you. You know, the discussions that we've had so far really have not gotten down to that granularity. You know, I think that that's a good discussion to have within the court family on, you look at the Supreme Court budget, you look at the appellate, you look at the Superior Courts. The appellate courts, you know, fortunately are in a pretty good spot with respect to a fund that's available that can be utilized for a wide variety of operational needs. And the conversation we have had with the exec branch is, you know, they've looked over and said, wow, you know, you have $24 million sitting there. And I would expect that if we have proposals moving forward directly for the appellate, there will be a moment of, is it necessary to hit the state general fund, or can they do it on their own through the appellate court trust fund? So that, I think, is the main question. And a lot of these proposals are very meritorious. I think we should consider the trust fund that's available to be used for these purposes.
All right. Mr. Roddy, any questions?
I have no questions. My general comment, however, would be that I agree with John in the sense that I think the bar is going to be extremely high. I think we need to be very careful about requests that we put forward, regardless of how meritorious they are. And frankly, when I start to hear about this appellate trust fund, it reminds me of trial court trust fund reserves a few years ago. And it becomes an easy target for Department of Finance and others. And so I think the extent to which we can internally rely and use that fund for some of these really worthy programs is going to serve us better than trying to move forward with BCPs that, frankly, would be dead on arrival given the current state of the budget and revenues and everything we've heard so far.
Thank you, Mr. Roddy. Ms. Wallen-Roman?
Nothing more than what I've already said. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you all. All right, we're going to move now to the next set. The next set are going to – and first of all, thank you, Ms. Speed and Ms. Pettit. Although, Ms. Pettit, I think we're getting you back a little bit later, and sorry about the split in your presentation times. But thank you, Ms. Speed.
Judge Rubin, did you want a motion as to the first set?
No. That's a great idea. I was thinking we would do all of them first, and then we'll start
shifting
through them. All right, we're going to the second set. It's actually in two parts. So there's 21-07, 08, 09, and also 21-24. And this is Mr. Denton, Mr. Will, and Ms. Huff. So let's start with 07, Mr. Denton.
Hi, good morning, Judge Rubin and members. 21-07 is our request to support language access efforts in the California courts. It has two main components. The bulk of it is an augmentation for the Court Interpreter Fund. As people know, we've been working with the administration year to year to make sure that the fund has enough resources. We put in a range of funding for the augmentation. It's a large range. It's 8 to 30 million. The low range assumes that we would get additional funding from the administration. We have a pending request in the 2020 budget for $8 million, and we're hoping that stays in the May revise. So that number would be lowered to what is appropriate for the Court Interpreter Fund. And then the second component is two new positions for information technology. So we worked on this with Heather. Those staff would work to make improvements to the Court Interpreter data collection system, including developing a scheduling component for court interpreters. So that's my summary of that request.
Thank you so much, Mr. Denton. Mr. Will, on 08.
Yes, this proposal is developed in response to judicial officers' need for more resources to serve mental health needs of children and families in juvenile probate guardianship and other case types. It projects building three things for the court: a digital platform for remote access to direct assistance and resources, a multidisciplinary work group, and funding for courts to pilot innovative approaches.
Thank you, Mr. Will. On 09, Ms. Huff.
Good morning. So this proposal, first of all, seeks to continue the $19.1 million that has been allocated to the Superior Court self-help assistance for the last 2 years, and we have one additional year left, and so would need to submit a BCP in order to continue that ongoing funding. It also projected increasing those funds by an additional $25 million to help meet the needs that courts have identified to address the civil case types and other emerging needs, which I think we're all anticipating, particularly as a result of the pandemic, is many, many more people coming into self-help, and also to provide some more statewide assistance to provide more remote assistance and simplification of forms and processes.
All right, well, thank you very much. And then Mr. Will, 21-24.
Yes, sir. This proposal was actually developed by the California CASA Association and then forwarded to Judicial Council for consideration at this meeting. The proposal, California CASAs are 44 nonprofits around the state, directly serve the juvenile court judges by providing them trained volunteers and doing court reports on the children that they volunteer for. California CASA projects that CASAs will be under great financial difficulty in the coming years because of the pandemic, both through an increase in foster care numbers and a decrease in their ability to raise funds. They are all independent nonprofits. So they are requesting of general fund allocations to allow them to sustain their operations and continue supporting the courts and serving the juvenile court judges during this quite lengthy period. They expect to have a downturn in their ability to sustain programs.
All right, outstanding. So let's go around for questions on any of these, Judge Mormon.
Yes, I do have a couple of questions. One on 2109. I will say that the expansion of self-help, access to self-help and self-help-related resources through this two phases of funding has really helped people in rural areas and people who have not been able to physically come to any courthouse. And I'm wondering if that budget request, so it's a request for some money to maintain the existing program, which is a three-year basis, and then some funding for improvements going forward. I was wondering if that can be carved up somehow. I think, and I will defer to John and Zlatko and anybody else about the message, but I think maintaining access through self-help and remote technology is completely consistent with this governor's priorities. And so my question is, what would be the message do you believe would be sent if we were to ask for this? So that's one of my questions. I have another.
Judge, this is John. I think that the base amount, I believe the $19.1 million, that seems like the right thing to move forward. Program expansions at this time across the board are just not, we're not seeing that. My recommendation would be at this particular time, not to grow it, but to ask for resources to maintain what we have.
All right. And then Judge Mormon, your other question?
My other question has to do with 2108 and might have some relevance to 2124, but I don't think so. So in the world of presiding judges and in the world of juvenile court judges, we've been getting information that there might be money coming forward to our youth in our dependency courts and transitional age youth for some of these types of services that are being talked about in 2108. And while I think 2108 has enormous merit, I'm wondering if it would be perceived incorrectly in light of there might be funding coming from a different direction. Are you aware of funding coming from a different direction? And what do you think the message would be about asking for this?
This is Don Will. I believe that the federal government has put out signals that they are attempting to build funding for foster kids during this crisis. I would say that the proposal is actually slanted not towards dependency courts, which have at least some dedicated funding for mental health, but also to the courts who have nothing, for instance, probate guardianship, cases that may come in to child custody through that door, and some juvenile justice cases.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. I thank you, Judge Mormon. Judge Bakke.
I had a question for Don, Will, and John along the same lines as Judge Mormon's question as to 2108. When the reference to the Medi-Cal Healthier California for All program is made, and again, this is kind of where Ann was going, but are there going to be funds from that that would then help those kids that are involved through the juvenile system, foster care, et cetera, for wraparound services? And is this ask going to look to that program for the money, or is this our separate ask in conjunction with that along the lines of the governor's view?
Judge Bakke, this is a separate ask, but is definitely built around the strategy that local courts, along with their partners in the counties, can access more Medi-Cal services and Medi-Cal funding for kids in the courts if they pursue it as a coordinated strategy with local stakeholders and with the help of the services that this proposal envisions.
Okay, Don, thank you. And John, maybe you and Blocko can answer this. Would it be, as far as our ask is concerned, would it be redundant with what the governor is talking about with the Medi-Cal Healthier California in his budget summary, where DOF would just say, well, to the extent that people that are in your system would need access to funding like that, they would get it through Medi-Cal already, assuming they were eligible.
Judge, this is John, and I think it'll be interesting to see at the governor's May revision what is retained that was originally proposed in his January proposal. So to the extent that it's a budget winner and that every – for example, if you're getting $3 for every $1 general fund, that's a budget winner. And, it's got that dynamic going on here. I think we'll see signals at the May revise. If their proposal continues, then, certainly this body, I think, should consider moving forward.
That said, all signs at this point that I've been given from the administration is, you know, things are getting really stripped down throughout. So I don't know if I've answered your question, Judge.
No, that makes sense, because the thoughts of January are much different than the thoughts of April, even in the governor's mind. I appreciate that. Thank you, John.
Sure.
Justice Fujisaki.
Well, I would just like to register my strong support for getting as much funding as possible on the 09, the self-help centers. But I just wanted to clarify on 2124, John, is it your assessment? Do you have the same assessment for 24 in terms of saying that it's you know, asking for funding to sustain current services? That is something that would be supported versus getting funding to grow services.
Yes, and with respect to my rationale for arguing to retain our base funding is the signals we're getting from the administration and the legislature is the June budget will be a baseline budget, a non-growth budget, with the exception of those three priorities that I outlined. And so consistent with that, I think it's appropriate to say, our base level right now, we would need the $19.1 million in order to retain current levels of operations without any growth. I think that's consistent with the messaging we're getting from both the administration and the legislature.
Right, right. And also I do see that in 24 there is specific consideration of COVID-19, unlike some of the other resolutions.
That's correct.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. Justice Hill.
No question. Thank you.
Thank you, Justice Hill. Judge Hopp.
There are benefits to being later in the rotation. All my questions were answered already. Thank you.
Thank you, Judge Hopp. Mr. Roddy.
No questions. Thank you.
All right. And Ms. Wallen-Roman.
Nothing more. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. All right. And thank you to Ms. Hopp, Mr. Will, and Mr. Denton for being with us, and sorry for the lateness of our start that you can blame on my inability to move us more efficiently, but we're good now. We're getting there. So let me move on to the next set. The next set is going to be 21-10-11-12-22. And I think we have Mike Courtney with us. Is that right?
Yes. Good morning, Judge Rubin, and good morning, committee members.
All right. Give us a couple of on each one.
Sure. Number 10 is a policy item to come in line with or begin to come in line with the governor's greenhouse gas initiatives and an executive order that the executive branch are following. We got a strong signal this past year prior to the current environment that the Department of Finance would be expecting judicial counsel design and construction projects to be in line with the governor's initiatives. So that's an ongoing proposal. Number 11 is to deal with the insolvency of the State Court Facilities Construction Fund. This particular fund pays for all of my staff and my operations costs. It pays for debt service on the SB 1732 courthouse construction program, and it funds part of the facility modification program that's overseen by Judge Byrd's committee.
Mr. Courtney? Mr. Courtney?
There's others still on the line. Yeah.
All right, I have a concept. Why don't we, is everyone still here?
Yes.
Yes.
Right. Mr. Courtney, are you back? All right, why don't we do this? Let's move on to the next group. That's 13, 14, and 15 with Mr. Teodorovic, and then
when Mr. Courtney pops back on, we can continue.
Certainly. Thank you, Judge. Issue 2113 is an issue of providing a cost of doing business adjustment for the trial court. This was something that was raised last year as part of a budget change proposal that was submitted to the administration.
This is Mike Courtney, I'm back.
All right, well then I can defer my time.
All right, great.
Zlatko, did you present number 12?
No, we moved on.
No, we moved on to the next set.
Oh. All right.
But you're back.
So number 12 is a proposal that's in the up for consideration or in the current budget year. This was approved by the council last year. This item has four components. $100 million for deferred maintenance. As everybody knows, we have substantial deferred maintenance across the court system. It has funding for trial court maintenance. We're trying to establish a standard across the state on how we maintain buildings, and we currently can't meet that without the additional funding. Funding for appellate courts, about $10 million for appellate court maintenance and repairs, and then additional funding for my operation to provide staffing to support the dollars that are being asked for. And then the last item is a placeholder right now for capital outlay next year. The figure that's used in the placeholder is simply the second year ask of the five-year plan that was in front of the council previously this year. Happy to answer any questions.
Right. And just that was to remind everyone, that was the joint meeting we had with Facilities and Us, which is the cap outlay program. All right, so let's do some questions, if there are any. Judge Mormon.
Yes, thank you. A couple of questions. I guess I'll start with the last one first, 2112, and you lined out the various components. I'm wondering if, well, two things. One, I'd like to ask, with regard to the placeholder piece, what does it mean from a political / visual message sending perspective to be advancing what's called a placeholder? So that's one question I have. And the second question I have is, of the various components, if you were to prioritize 1 through 4, or can you? I mean, it seems to me $100 million for deferred maintenance. Deferred maintenance is things that are already broken that haven't been fixed. Is that right?
That's partially correct. The deferred maintenance, and our deferred maintenance across the state is currently $2.4 billion. In good economic times, we've been getting $30, $40, $50 million through the budget to do deferred maintenance projects, but we're not catching up. We're actually losing ground.
We're falling further behind every year.
Yeah, the link between maintenance and deferred maintenance is this. If you have a fully funded maintenance program, then you aren't incurring any additional deferred maintenance. So the problem we have is we're way behind on deferred maintenance, and you can see that in the courthouses. And every year we continue to maintain our buildings at a level below a standard we're trying to establish, we fall further behind on the maintenance. So it's a catch-22. The appellate court funding that's in here is, you know, equally as important for the appellate court facilities. And then my staffing request is tied to the $100 million, as well as a couple positions tied to the additional maintenance.
Oh, okay. I see.
If I had to rank them, boy, that's a tough one. Getting our buildings up to an acceptable maintenance level, to me, is very important. We've been fighting to do that for the last 5 years. We were successful last year to get some funding for maintenance. But we've got 5 courthouses under construction right now. They'll be coming online in this 21-22 budget year. And without this funding, we would have to cut funding elsewhere to maintain those buildings that will be coming online. So the maintenance is probably the highest priority for me.
Okay. Thank you. And then I know I asked that other question about messaging, and John or Zlatko will answer
sure.
at one point. But I want to also just comment. It seems to me that it's imperative that we ask. It's imperative that we continue our ask to address an insolvency problem that is represented by 2111. So when you comment on the placeholder question, maybe you can comment on that.
Sure. So the reason the placeholder is in here is, you know, we don't know right now what, if any, capital outlay funding will be included in the upcoming budget. Based on what I heard from John, I'm candidly not very optimistic. So the placeholder is simply there. If we get nothing this year, would the Judicial Council, you know, want to re-ask for the funds it didn't get this year, next year? That's the whole point of the placeholder. If the Judicial Council, if your committee and the council makes the decision to not propose any cap outlay, then obviously the placeholder goes away. The insolvency is very critical because, as I said, that's what funds my staff and funds the repairs we do now to courthouses, as well as the debt service to the courthouses that were built in the SB 1732 program.
Thank you.
Thank you, Judge Bakke.
I think maybe John or Zlatko was going to jump in there, and before they do that, I'll ask them sort of the same question, and Mike, you can answer also. But, you know, those two items, 11 and 12, when, John, you talk about a baseline budget, sort of more status quo than anything else, perhaps, these two items seem like these would be, to some extent, included, because the more we defer those things, the more expensive they are down the line, the more access to justice is affected, and certainly, you know, providing safe facilities for the public and our staff is paramount. And I understand that there are so many other things that need to be addressed, but these seem like ones that just keep coming back and coming back because, you know, if we don't have a facility, we don't have a facility. And I can tell you from my own experience, even in a new facility or a newer facility as we have now, there's still a fair amount of ongoing maintenance that has to be done that unfortunately is, you know, coming with a cost. And I realize again that in light of the current situation and the political ask that these are two fairly weighty items, but even in light of that, are these something, John, that you and Zlatko think whether modified or otherwise, would be legitimate right now in light of the climate we're in?
Thank you, Judge Bakke. This is John Wardlaw. With respect to the solvency issue, item number 11 for the State Court Facility Construction Fund, that in my mind is a critical item that really must go forward. This has been on Department of Finance's radar. They're expecting it. They know that we have this problem. So I would put that on the list of moving forward, my recommendation. And then with respect to deferred maintenance, in the January budget, the governor signaled a priority that statewide there's a $62 billion deferred maintenance problem. We are ranked number 4 out of a relatively long list of entities that have deferred maintenance problems. Ours is in the magnitude of about $2.5 billion. And, you know, when we talk about base operations and the ability to function as a court system, you've got to have facilities that are operational. It's just core. I think that some of our courthouses are in a condition that, quite frankly, really challenges our ability to function as a court system. And so I think it is prudent to ask for dollars for maintenance purposes, even in this climate.
Thank you.
All
John.
Right. Thank you, John.
All right, Justice Fujisaki.
I'm fine. Thank you.
Very well. Justice Hill.
Thanks, Judge Rubin. I agree with the comments that John just made. The only question I would ask on the capital outlay program, and I understand that that will in all likelihood not be something that we'll be proceeding with this year. Is it better strategically and tactically not to take it off the table now, but to allow the chief and Martin the opportunity to pull that back during any budget negotiations with DOF and the governor?
Justice Hill, this is John again. My recommendation would be to support items 11 and 12 moving forward. And then, just as you say, as the discussions continue with the governor or the chief, should there be a need to pull back, then that decision would be made at that time. But I'd recommend support of both the solvency of the state court facility construction fund and our deferred maintenance request. I would not support at this particular juncture, though, the item dealing with basically the green initiatives. It's just we've tried that proposal in the past. It didn't get traction. I think it is something that is meritorious, but doesn't meet the criteria. And quite frankly, as we have projects moving forward, when the economy improves, then I would suggest that we build in those efficiencies in those projects. And as we continue on maintenance, should we get additional maintenance money, that we do employ green technologies in the maintenance function just as a core operative moving forward rather than having a single proposal on that.
Thanks, John. And as to the placeholder for the capital program?
Yes, my recommendation would be to continue to move that forward. And should the chief need to pull it back at a later point, then that decision gets made. But I recommend we move forward with it.
Great. Thanks a lot.
Sure.
Thank you, Justice Hill. Judge Hopp.
No questions. Thanks.
Thank you, Judge Hopp. Mr. Roddy.
No questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Roddy. Ms. Wallen-Roman.
No questions. Thank you.
Thank you. And Mr. Courtney, thank you for waiting for us and for giving such a concise and great presentation. Appreciate it. I think you're the first one that actually cleared out all of his presentations at once. Great.
Thanks.
Thank you. All right. So moving on now to items 13, 14, and 15. And let's go back to Zlatko.
Great. Thank you, Judge. So as I was saying, the inflationary adjustment for the trial courts was something that was part of a budget change proposal that was submitted by the branch to the administration last September. What remained in the governor's budget of that comprehensive proposal was an adjustment based on a calculation done by the Department of Finance of a 3% increase on trial court allocations that resulted in a $61.7 million, almost $62 million going into the state budget. We will see whether or not that stands. This is a continuation of that effort proposed by the trial court budget advisory committee. The concern is that base costs will continue to grow regardless of what workload does, and it is important that these types of costs are addressed within the budget context. We'll see whether or not the proposal that was in the governor's budget will continue in the May revision, and will give us a strong signal as to whether or not this is something that would be viewed as supportable in the budget year as a proposal for 21-22. But again, it is an important issue of cost adjustments for core costs in trial court operations. Depending on the approach and the value of the consumer price index, we just have an estimate of $50 to $7 million, depending on the approach that is that would go forward. The next issue is related to additional judgeships. If you recall that we have an outstanding need of additional judgeships throughout the state, we did receive funding for 25 judgeships in the current budget, meaning the 19-20 budget. We did not propose something for the 2021 year. This would be for 21-22 for 23 of the remaining judgeships that are authorized in AB 159. There's some issues that I'd like to raise in terms of the cost. We identify the judicial officers' pay as well as some staffing costs that go along with that math. But there is a facility cost that could be substantial that relates to this request, in so much as the 25 that were approved last year were able to be accommodated in existing facility space. These next 23 is our sort of initial look. Like we'll need some facility costs, which again could be substantial to make modification to facilities to accommodate them. And then the final item is related to civil assessments. As many of you know, there's revenues received through imposition of civil assessments on failure to appear and failure to pay with the individuals. Those revenues are currently deposited in the truck or trust fund as part of the revenue for base allocations and in some instances return to courts for their court operations. This proposal would ask that we take those revenues and deposit them into the general fund, and instead of relying on the revenues directly for court operations, we would then receive a like amount of general fund instead of the revenue from the civil assessments. It's been an ongoing issue of the trial courts and have been submitted several times with no success at this point to the administration. So that's my overview of those three items.
All right. Thank you for that. Let's go to questions. Judge Moorman.
Yes, I have two questions. Regarding the last item you discussed, 2115, so along the lines of my previous comment about information among presiding judges, we've pretty much issued emergency orders that have been in place now several weeks, suspending the collection of any civil assessments, which will, I believe, continue the downward trajectory of revenue from civil assessments. So did I understand you to say that this would be simply a process modification, whereas whatever we collected as civil assessments would go into general fund, and whatever that amount was, if it was $5, it would come back to us from the general fund. Is that right?
The proposal is based on historical value, and we've estimated that the swap amount is up $102 million based on the most recent civil assessment revenues we have. So the idea is that we would no longer be receiving the civil assessment revenue, but rather a general fund amount, and whatever civil assessment revenues we do receive, we would turn over to the general fund. Notwithstanding what you've discussed in terms of the impacts of COVID in the short term, this was just an idea of moving away from relying on the civil assessment as a funding source for the branch and the trial courts and moving towards general fund instead.
Okay. Thank you. And my second question relates to the 2113. And my question there is, if I understood you correctly, I apologize. I had somebody present something for me to sign, so I missed a little bit about what you said. This is in the May revise?
No, this was in the governor's budget, was an amount.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's what I meant to say. It's in the January budget, and you said we'll get a real strong signal if it's in the May revise what to do, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, well, definitely we would know whether or not, you know, what's the position of the administration. But, again, part of workload budgets may be addressing the cost of doing business. So it might be that it's still an issue that we might want to pursue with the administration as a base budget cost rather than anything viewed as a program enhancement. So this is definitely one that is, in my opinion, has some sense of continued discussion. But, again, the May revision will not be a strong indicator. It will be a direct indicator of whether or not the administration sees their January proposal as something worth continuing under the definition of a workload and baseline budget.
Thank you. I have nothing else. Thank you.
Thank you, Judge Moorman. Judge Bakke.
No questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Judge Bakke. Justice Fujisaki.
Just a real quick clarification. So on 15, the civil assessments, the way I'm looking at this, it's not a dollar for dollar kind of over to the general fund and back, right? I mean, it looks like for this to actually be something that avoids a conflict of interest, that there is, it's not a straight dollar for dollar. Is that right?
I mean, we estimate what we've done is have estimated the amount of revenues that the branch has received from civil assessments as some indicator of the amount that would be provided to the general fund through these revenues. But you're right. I mean, to the extent that civil assessments decline, that is then becomes a risk of the administration rather than a risk to trial court budgets. As it currently stands, if the civil assessments decline, those impact state funding for the courts. There's some aspects of civil assessments that are backfilled by the state general fund and others that are not. So, but in terms of dollar for dollar, we're just identifying an amount that was the level of support that the trial courts received at the $102 million level, and then assuming whatever it is that's collected civil assessments goes to the general fund.
Zlatko, this is John, and you know, quite frankly, with the anything that puts a greater pressure on the state general fund, I think it's just DOA. I don't see any way in which the administration or the legislature is pivoting in a direction that says, let's trade out civil assessments or other revenue streams for state general fund, given the climate we're in.
Okay.
Understood.
All right. Understood. Thank you.
Thank you, Justice Fujisaki. Justice Hill.
No questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Justice Hill. Judge Hopp.
I have kind of a depressing question related to the item about funding for new judgeships. Does either Zlatko or John anticipate that the administration might propose delaying the funding for the unfilled judges that were in the last budget?
I think that remains to be seen as the July revenues are looked at. That will be the point in which the administration and legislature figure out, you know, whether or not they need to dig deeper and go into reduction mode. So I think that there's a potential for it, but I have not heard anything to that effect at this point.
Thanks.
Thank you, Judge Hopp. Mr. Roddy.
No questions on this end. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Roddy. Mrs. Wallen-Roman.
Nope, I'm good. Thank you.
All right, thank you. And thank you, Zlatko.
Judge Rubin, I'm sorry. This is Justice Fujisaki.
Yes.
I think I do have one more question.
That's okay.
I'm
sorry. Look at me. That's absolutely Justice Fujisaki.
No. on 13, I thought this was one of the initiatives that I think Martin, you know, was very, you know, much in favor of, and I just wanted to hear some comment as to kind of its viability at this point.
Thank you, Justice. This is John again, and you're right. This is one of the items that the Judicial Council, Martin and the Chief, the trial courts, you know, really put a lot of energy in when the economic climate was good. We have received some signals that would strongly suggest that this will not likely be at May revise is my prediction on it. And so as Zlatko had indicated, May revise will be a good indicator given. And I should have shared this earlier. When we look at the revenues and directly tied to civil assessments and fees and where we're at, in the current year based on March receipts being down, we are projecting a current year reduction quite significant. And for budget year, another tough year as far as receipts are concerned. In total, it's about a $320 million decline we're seeing just in revenues on our side. And so that's not general fund at all. So as we talked about, personal income tax, sales tax, corporate taxes all being down, it's just across the board. And, you know, I just think that while a 3% kind of core base increase is the right thing, whether or not the market, the financial conditions will allow it remains to be seen. I do think it's worthy of moving forward with the cost of doing business is real and it increases. I don't think it really has much chance of success at this particular time, but it may be something we signal anyways, just as a matter of principle on court cost of doing business.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And at the risk, I don't want to cut you off again. Do you have any other questions? This is Judge Rubin.
Oh, no, thanks for asking, though.
And then Ms. Wallen-Roman, I think it was down to you. Or not. All right. Thank you, Zlatko, for that great presentation. Appreciate it very much. I know we've been on the phone now for an hour and a half. I was wondering if we could, if everybody's okay. I think under the circumstances of this new meeting environment, I'm going to keep going because people can stand up and stretch and, you know, grab a glass of water or whatever. They don't need a formal break. If anybody disagrees, I'm sure you'll let me know. All right, moving on now to dash 16, 17, and 18. This is Ms. Pettit. And Ms. Pettit, thank you for waiting around.
Not a problem. So if possible, I'd like to take all three of these together. And the reason why is after we've gotten the briefing from Zlatko and John on kind of the state of the budget and what's happening, we had several BCPs that were in the governor's January proposed budget, as well as we had some spring letters, BCPs that we had requested. And so after careful discussion with JCTC, we have decided to go back and actually reevaluate all of the technology projects that have been requested, specifically the BCPs that were in play for potentially fiscal year 2021, as well as all of these three BCCs. With the thought that we know that there is a huge need for certain areas of technology, it's become very real in this current time period of this pandemic where our priorities need to lie along with the digital court and where our requirements. So we are actually going to go back and scrutinize all of these BCPs and only put forward what we believe are the priorities and rank them accordingly. So at our May 11th meeting, that will be the JCTC's charge, evaluating all those. We've also received feedback from ITAC on where they believe the immediate needs are for the next 2 to 3 years for the courts and the courts of appeal. So that is what our approach is going to be so that we can actually provide you what we truly believe is the critical need for the next 2 to 3 years when it comes to technology. And if anybody has any questions, I'd be more than happy to take them.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Pettit. Let me ask Judge Moorman.
I guess I have no questions in light of that statement. Thank you.
All right. Judge Bakke.
No questions. I do want to thank Heather, though, for her ongoing hard work with regard to all of these issues, because they have been coming up fast and furious now that we have transitioned, albeit a somewhat forced transition, to a heavy use of technology, and want to commend Heather for the job that she's doing. That's all I have. Thank you.
All right. Justice Fujisaki?
No, thank you.
All right. Justice Hill?
No questions. No. Thank you.
All right. Judge Ha?
Questions, thanks.
All right. Girardi?
Nothing, thank you.
And Ms. Wallen-Roman?
I would just echo Judge Bakke in relation to Heather and her leadership and the team at the JCCIT and JCTC.
makes it lots easier for us when the programs and the operations are doing that prioritization. So thank you.
All right. Thank you. And thank you again, Ms. Pettit, and thank you for waiting around for us. Let's go now on to dash 19, 20, and 21. And this is Ms. Curran, if she's still with us.
Yes, good morning. I'm still with you. It's three different proposals, and I'm happy to present all of them, Judge Rubin, and then answer any questions that you have, if that would be the easiest way to do this. Do you want me to launch into all three?
Yeah, thank you.
Sure. So the first one has
yeah,
to do
you.
With funding for the trial courts related to evaluators for mental health proceedings. It's an ask of $4.157 million ongoing. It addresses the increased needs for the trial courts related to the inability to find alienists and evaluators in incompetent to stand trial cases. The numbers of people who are referred for this continue to go up significantly over the last 5 years. The costs to the courts have gone up annually 9% per year. And there's also a significant variation throughout the state when it comes to how much money it is that the courts have to pay for these evaluations to occur. So what these dollars do is increase funding that will go directly to the trial courts in order to identify people. The district council will maintain a list. They'll work with the courts in order to help identify people who might serve this purpose and just create some sustained ongoing funding in order to address this growing problem that we have in the criminal justice system. 21 address sex offender registry. In 2017, SB 384 was passed. SB 384 creates tiering for sex offender registrants. We anticipate that there will be an onslaught of petitions to the courts to address this issue because everyone who is currently on the 290 registrant Megan Voigt database presumably could go back and petition the courts. The experience that the court saw and DOJ saw when Megan's Law was originally passed is many more defendants, or registrants, I should say, who are on the list actually petition the courts to be removed from the list, whether or not they're actually eligible right now or not. And so this is a one-time ask. Expenditures monies can be used through June 2023, and it's for $29.15 million. And again, it's similar to the Prop 47 money that the trial courts received, recognizing that there's going to be an onslaught of one-time new work for the courts. And so to try to address some of that, some of the work that's going to come to the trial courts. And then the last proposal that we have is 21-22, and this addresses collaborative courts. It's $15 million general fund in 21-22. $30 million ongoing. The issue with collaborative courts is historically the funding has really been somewhat piecemeal. You know, dollars have come through Innovations Grant, Recidivism Reduction Fund, Parolee Reentry Court, one-time dollars, and then some federal fundings. And so really what the purpose of this request is to provide some ongoing, sustained, identified money for collaborative courts to address a lot of the needs that collaborative courts have throughout the states. And the, you know, one thing that I will, the last point that I will make is that collaborative courts is something that the legislature historically has looked upon very, very favorably, as I think all of you on the phone know. And so those are the three requests that we have related to criminal law and procedure, and I'm happy to answer any questions. I also have my colleague, Francine Byrne, on the phone if you have anything specific that you'd like to get into.
Ms. Curran, thank you. Outstanding. Let's talk to the committee. Judge Moorman, any questions?
I guess the question would be for John or Zlatko, since this is none of these three proposals fall within the definition of our working budget. I take it your recommendation would be to not pursue these at this time?
Judge, my recommendation would be that we assemble a list of items that should the economic conditions prove that they would get consideration in moving forward on a priority basis. But if what we think is going to be what the, you know, the story is declines, then I would be in agreement with that, that they don't appear to make the threshold of a dire must have in order to sustain or keep the courts operational. And unfortunately, if the conditions continue to be on the path that everyone sees them being, I don't think that they would get the traction at this point.
Thank you. Nothing else.
Thank you, Judge Moorman. Judge Bakke.
I agree with what John said. I think, as Shelley laid out, all three are very important. And I, even though it's the smallest of the three, the 1368 issue for people across the state is a difficult one. Courts have seen those costs go up astronomically over the last couple of years. Rural courts such as mine and Judge Moorman's have a very difficult time finding the qualified people to do it, the evaluation at a reasonable cost, but in light of the circumstances, I understand John's position. And I also want to thank Shelley for the information presented here and the work that CJS is doing, especially in light of the emergency rules. Thank you.
Thank you, Judge Bakke. Justice Fujisaki.
No questions. Thank you.
Very well. Justice Hill.
No questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Judge Ha.
Yeah, I second or echo what Judge Bakke said, and I particularly would like to emphasize the importance of collaborative courts as we're going through the public health crisis, but I can't see that it's wise to push for this funding under the current circumstances.
Thank you. And Mr. Roddy?
No questions. Thank you.
And Ms. Wallen-Roman?
Nope, no comments for me. Thank you.
Outstanding. Ms. Curran, and to you and your staff, thank you for hanging around and waiting with us. Very much appreciate that. Thank you for your presentation.
Sure.
And finally, our last one is 21-23. That's HCRC. And I think we have Mr. Hursek and Mr. Stanford with us.
Yes, good morning, Judge. Mike Hursek here, and Mr. Stanford will take questions about the numbers. That's his area of expertise. So this is another Proposition 66 related request. The prior one that you've already discussed had to do with the funding of private counsel, at least one of the prior ones, one of the BCPs that you already considered, to accept post-conviction capital cases for habeas corpus purposes. And this proposal would increase the ability of HCRC to accept more of the same cases. As the BCP makes clear, I think the state has a dual approach, both a state entity, the HCRC, to accept these cases, and the private bar. I point out that the private bar in the last year, since the rules for Prop 66 were released, four attorneys have applied for the statewide panel. During the same time, my office has received more than 30 applications to join HCRC and learn to do these cases and do them well. I'm very cognizant of the situation we're in right now with the COVID-19 crisis. This proposal echoes last year's proposal and was put together before the crisis began, and as with the other proposals, we are more than willing to discuss trimming it down should this group think that be wise. Otherwise, we'll just take questions if anyone has them.
All right, very well. Thank you very much. And just to make one comment about what Mr. Hursek said, I think we all of us on this committee should thank and appreciate everybody who prepared these BCPs before COVID-19, and now they're on our desks, and they've had a chance for them to look at them again. So we appreciate that. Thank you. Judge Moorman.
So if you were to pare it down, what would it look like?
Well, it could be a more modest proposal to add more case teams in our existing location. That's one option, so that it would not at this time require opening a Los Angeles office or another office. As the committee probably is aware, HDRC is located and has been located in San Francisco, whereas most of the cases are in Southern California. And when we were practicing in the California Supreme Court, that made a bit of sense, and our clients, of course, are up here. Now CDCR is talking about moving our clients statewide, which will make it more difficult for us to reach them, but also the cases, of course, are now transferred to the superior courts statewide. So that's why we thought it wise to have a Southern California office. But we can postpone that until the state comes back online with a more normal budget cycle. That's just one option.
Judge
Moorman,
any other questions?
No, thank you.
All right. Thank you, Judge Moorman. Judge Wacky.
No questions. Just echo your words of thanks, David, to everybody who put all this together and then had to decide on
what's still terrible
going on. So good job, everyone. Thank you, David.
Thank you. I just feel terrible for everybody who worked so hard and was like, oh, wow, the rug got pulled out from under them. Justice Fujisaki?
No questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Justice Fujisaki. Justice Hill?
No questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Judge Hott.
Questions. Thank you.
All right. Mr. Roddy.
No questions.
All right. And Ms. Wallen-Roman.
Nope. No questions. Thank you.
All right. Thank you all. And thank you, Mr. Hrsek and Mr. Stanford. And thank you for waiting and being so patient. And we appreciate very much your presentation.
Thank you for your consideration.
All right.
Appreciate it.
Oh, no problem. All right. So we now, I think, reach the point. We're running about 10 minutes behind schedule. What I would propose is maybe a 5-minute stand and stretch. And then I think when we come back, and what we would do is, and if Ms. Cowan is there, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but what I think would be helpful is we need to look at this, it sounds like, in two tracks, a COVID-19 track and a COVID-19 modified track if things aren't as bad as we think. And then this is my thought, and then we would have kind of like an absolutely bare bones, the only thing we can hope for going forward so that we don't act like we're not part of the state and understand what's going on. So in my head, I'm thinking things that say insolvency or are about insolvency and to start with. And then another track with just maybe a few more than that with things that things seem to improve. And so we would take up that discussion maybe in a few minutes, and then each of us will kind of lay out, I think the ones we would select in the list, and then by definition, the ones we don't select would be deselected. Ms. Judge Moorman, any thoughts about that as an approach? You did the stand and stretch early. Great. Not a problem. Judge Bakke?
That sounds good to me.
All right. Justice Fujisaki?
That sounds good. Thank you.
Justice Hill?
That sounds fine.
All right. Judge Hopp?
That's good. Thanks.
All right. Mr. Roddy?
Fine with me.
And Ms. Wallen-Roman?
Yeah, works for me. Thank you.
All right. So everybody stand up, stretch, take a deep breath. And then it's now 10:57. Let's come back here about 11:02, and we'll start in. But don't hang up.
Yeah,
leave your phones on. Put them on mute.
Please on mute. Thank you.
All right. Ms. Cowan, are you there?
Yes, I am.
All right, let's give it another minute, and then we'll take another roll to see who came back.
Okay.
All right, it's been 5 minutes. Let's go ahead and let's take a roll and see who's back on. Ms. Cowan, can you do that?
I will. It's Reuben. You're back. It's Mormon. It's Botkey.
I'm here.
Thank you. Justice Fujisaki.
Here.
Justice Hill.
Here.
Judge Hopp.
I'm here.
All right. Mr. Roddy.
I am here.
And Ms. Wallen-Roman.
Sorry, I'm here.
Thank you. I think everybody's back.
All right.
All right.
And do we have Mr. Wardlaw and Mr. Theodorovic as well?
This is John Wardlaw.
And Zlatko's on the line as well.
All right. Here's, given the nature of the times we're in, and normally we do this the other way, but given the nature and given the comments I was hearing throughout, I was wondering if we might start with our staff, Mr. Wardlaw, Mr. Theodorovic, and Ms. Mueller, to kind of run through the list with us and if they could kind of give us their guidance on what they think would be the best to push forward, like in the worst scenario, maybe if it eases up a little, what to put on the second list, and then I'll go around the room and see what others think as well. If that's not too much of an imposition, let me start with Mr. Wardlaw.
Sure. Thank you, Judge. So why don't I approach it from, I do think that the list that we have is a thoughtful list, and I didn't see anything on it that if we had improved economic conditions, good times, that I would suggest backing away from. So with that, given the threshold we're working with is anything that is absolutely critical to support base operations or address workload that we see is kind of the threshold I'm using. So my recommendation would be Prop 66. For all entities that are affected by that, we would consider a proposal to address that. Next up is the self-help base operation amount of $19.1 million. Third item would be our state court facilities construction fund, the solvency issue. That fund is going insolvent. Needs to have attention. I recommend support of our deferred maintenance. As our buildings are crumbling, we've got to be able to keep them operational. And then finally, on a matter of principle, I think I would support the inflationary adjustment, just recognizing that the core operations and the core cost of doing business for our trial court continues to increase. And we should signal that. So that would be the list that I would recommend moving forward for consideration at this point. Understanding that the May revise, we would take another look at what the governor has included or not included in the budget, and then potentially make some adjustments at that point. So I'll stop and see if there are any questions, or defer over to Zlatko for a comment. And this.
Let me run the room for questions, but I do have one. Judge Mormon?
No questions. That was my list as well.
All right. Judge Bakke?
No questions.
Justice Fujisaki.
I have no questions. I might have a little bit of a different list. We'll save that for later,
We'll get there. Don't worry.
Okay,
yeah, we'll get there.
Okay.
Justice Hill?
This is basically my list as well. The only question I had, John, is on the capital program placeholder, with the understanding that that probably will not proceed. It was my thought, and I thought you'd indicated that we wouldn't pull it back at this juncture. Is that correct?
Yes, Justice Hill, that is correct. My recommendation is not to pull it back at this point.
Okay. Thank you.
Judge Ha?
No questions. Thank you, John.
Mr. Roddy?
No questions. Thank you.
And Ms. Wallen-Roman?
No questions. Thank you.
All right. I guess I had a question, which was, so in my head, as I was saying, I saw this as insolvency and then programmatic issues as well. But it seemed to me when I read the language access program 21-07, it was talking about insolvency as well in its BCP. Did I miss that or did I misread it? And I was wondering. Go ahead.
This is Lago. So part of it is to provide the projected level of increased costs and the service levels that exist. So there is an aspect of it that is continuing. It's not an insolvency issue because they're not per se a technical fund. It's just whether or not the funding is meeting up with the need. And there are ways in which we could, based on limited resources, have to adjust and prioritize the services that are provided. But that's not been the case thus far. We've been asking for funding and receiving it in the budget for language access.
Okay, fair enough. All right. So normally we do this from in the room together. I don't know another way to do it. We're on the phone. I guess maybe next time we'll do a team meeting on Microsoft or a Zoom. But in any event, let me go to Judge Moorman. What would be the ones you'd like to see going forward under a worst case scenario?
Under the worst case scenario, the ones I think we should put forward are the ones I had my little list going, 5, 9, 11, and 12. And I, 13, I would just defer to John, but that was the list, the bare bones list that I had developed. And I say that, I guess I want to add with regard to 9, to change 9 to reflect what's needed to continue the program as it is and not ask for an expansion.
That's the $19.1 million that Mr. Wardlaw was talking about, correct?
Yeah.
All right. And then 11 and 12. Right. Okay, got it. All right. Thank you, Judge Moorman. Let's go to Judge Bakke.
I think it's obvious you could make a compelling case for each one of these, but I'll cut to the chase, and that is that I agree with John Wardlaw's list with the addition of Judge Moorman's request with respect to the self-help funding as reduced to the $19.1 million. Thank you.
All right. And then thank you, Judge Bakke. And let's go now to Justice Fujisaki.
Hi, thank you. So the one place where I would differ is I would propose to vote approval on 03, the cap increase, and take the POP 6605 off. And I wasn't quite clear. Was John also supporting the HCRC 23 one as well, both of those, or just one or the other?
Yes, Justice, this is John Wardlaw. And my recommendation is, given the workload implications associated with the Prop 66 and the real concern by all parties that we would combine a Prop 66 proposal that includes all interested parties, the BCP would have its respective entities, appellate courts, superior courts, and HCRC are all kind of broken out under the umbrella of Prop 66.
Okay, okay. Okay. I guess given that, then I'm more open on Prop 66. I wasn't quite sure about focusing just solely on the Court of Appeal as stated in 05 right now, or 23. But if the trial courts are in there, then that I think is does need to be dealt with. So I guess 05, 09 with the 19.1. 11, 12, 13, 21, and then on 24, I was wondering whether we could get that $8 million to sustain the services in there.
Okay. All right, I've got that. Sitting down. So if I understand your list correctly, it would be, and this is the BCP numbers, it would be number 3, number 5 combined with the trial court piece. So that would be like combined as one. Is that right?
No. It would be 05 with a combined trial court, 09
right. That's number two.
With a 19.1, yes. 11.
That was it.
12.
9, 11.
9, 11, 12, 13. 22, I think, based on what John was saying, and then 24, if we could get $8 million to sustain the services.
Right. So 3, 9, 11, 12, 13, 22, and 24. With
right.
That's the number. Go ahead.
Right. And you know, this is kind of my wish list under the circumstances. On 03, I can be talked out of that.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Justice Hill.
Thank you, Judge Rubin. I support the list that John indicated at the outset, and I'm not sure I have in mind at this point any best case scenario, because I'd have to know what the best case is, and I would propose that if there is a better case other than the dire case we're dealing with, that we hold another meeting on that, because it's hard to do it in a vacuum. So I support the original list as delineated by John.
Outstanding. And I think that's a great suggestion. We can talk about that in a minute. I think that's a better approach, because it's otherwise we're sort of shadow boxing. But let me go on to the next person. We come back and talk about that. Judge Hott.
5, including trial court funding, 9 and 11.
Okay, thank you, Judge Hopp. And then Mr. Roddy.
Like Judge Hill, I support the list as suggested by John. I think that gives them, in addition, the ability to move things. When I say them, I'm talking about Chief and the Martin and the Chief, to move things around as things unfold. But I support the list as recommended by John.
All right. And then Ms. Wallen-Roman.
Yeah, I would support the list recommended by John, and then just add the footnote that we still consider the IT ones once JCTC comes back to the table.
Okay. Wait a second. Yes, you do hear me writing. Not typing. Okay. I guess I'm in agreement with the list proposed by John as well. Let me ask Zlatko and Ms. Mueller, did you have any thoughts about the list as either?
I think you're doing the right thing.
So, I would concur.
Good.
I would concur. It's focused on priorities.
All right.
David.
Judge Rubin.
Yes.
This is Judge Bakke. One thing I just wanted to add, and I think Judge Mormon spoke to this earlier, and this goes back to the self-help money. One thing that I don't think was put out there is rather obvious, and that is, I would assume, in light of the awful unemployment numbers that we're seeing here in California and across the country, you would have, when we do get back up and running full steam, more people that are going to be representing themselves that ostensibly would not be able to hire their own lawyer. And I would just throw that aspect in there, too, with regard to that issue as to the self-help funding.
Let me ask Mr. That's a great observation. Let me ask Mr. Wardlaw a question, or Mr. Theodorovic or Ms. Mueller. It goes like this. Do you think, either individually or collectively, or that by May or June, we'll have a better picture of how the unemployment piece will be impacted? In other words, I'm starting to see reports that they're starting to, at least in San Diego, they're talking about kind of a easing some of the restrictions, like opening parks again. And it sounds like there may be some changes in the employment picture by the summer. I'm wondering what we would know by then and how we would account for that in the self-help piece.
Hi, Judge Rubin, this is John Wardlaw, and we've been really trying to monitor that closely. And at this point, it is very difficult to tell when conditions are likely to change. Obviously, there is tremendous economic pressure mounting to get the economy moving again. When the governor will declare an opportunity to relax on some of the protocols in place right now is very challenging. The governor has signaled, though, that, you know, until you're able to test broadly, you're not able to identify and then focus on specific targeted areas. I think the economic engine that is at a stall right now, there will be great pressure to move. That said, the other counter side of it is, until you can test broadly, it's going to be hard to contain virus without having a broad, a current environment of social distancing, staying at home, many businesses closed. So, long way of saying, I don't know what the projection is going to be as far as when do we relax on some of the current protocols.
Okay, and I think, Judge Bakke, I think the way when we do these motions in front of the council, we always yield to the chief and Martin, you know, they can make technical changes. And so if we are a little low in our number, they can always move that number up. If it looks like things are coming back online and people need lawyers or need self-help a lot more than we've asked for. So they could always change that number upwards in their dialogue with DOF.
No, I agree with that totally.
Yeah.
So this is Ann. Can I just comment on that?
Go ahead. Yeah.
So I'm wondering if then maybe our recommendation should be, with regard to 9, to move it forward as it is and give them their flexibility that direction. So they could pull things back. I'm wondering if is that a better way to go about it, or is it 6 of one, half dozen of another?
Mr. Wardlaw, Ms. Mueller, Mr. Theodorovic?
Thank you, Judge. This is John again. My recommendation would be, you know, at the May revise, that there be another moment of consideration on the scale of these proposals. There's, although it's just a few weeks away, a lot can be signaled in those 2 weeks or so, 3 weeks. And so my suggestion would be to scale back at this point, and if an opportunity presents itself to build back up, then do it. But you have made the hard calls now, and it just improves if the conditions improve.
Okay, thank you. I think that the messaging is really key to getting anything beyond, even getting these items, but getting anything beyond it. And so that's why I propose cutting back 09 to the 19.1, I think it's 1 million, even though I think Judge Bakke's comment is completely on the money, and we are going to see just a tidal wave of self-represented people.
And Judge Warman, we do have a meeting scheduled in May in the next phase, so we will be meeting after the May revision comes out. As John has said, that there'll be information that'll inform that conversation and will give the programs an opportunity to react to what you want to move forward to the council in terms of budget change proposals. So we that is part of the process, is that we can see what's happening in May revision and have the committee the advisory committee, you guys look at all of it in the context of that. So we will have that opportunity.
Thank you.
Here's a thought. I think under the circumstances, the expectation is that this committee will be somewhat more active than normal on these budget change proposals in an effort to tailor the BCPs sent to the council to actually reflect what the possibilities are. I think what I'm hearing is there's not total consensus, but it seems like we've landed in pretty much the same place. Apologies to Justice Fujisaki, who was more optimistic than I am. But it seems like what I'm hearing is there's broad agreement, at least, on Mr. Wardlaw's proposed or his council list. And then if we get together again in May, we have a judicial council meeting anyway in May. If after the May revise, we were able to sit down and kind of go back over some of this and see if we want to expand it to include other BCPs or the current BCPs with different numbers, that would be the time to do that, it would seem. And then we'll have another shot at this. But that we would at least move forward kind of these five or so, or it incorporates more than that, incorporates more like six. And I think we already have a meeting lined up in May. Is that right, Mr. Theodorovic? He's muted us. I think we already have a meeting set up.
Yeah, but there will be a meeting that we've planned for May time period, the end of the month, yes.
Perfect. Does that make sense to everybody, Ms. Judge Moorman?
Yes, that's fine. Can I ask, I'm sorry, this is going to be, I'm sure you said it early. When is the May revise expected?
Judge, the May revision is May 14th.
Okay, thank you. And yes, I agree with the idea.
All right, and then Bakke, Judge Bakke?
Nothing else.
All right, Justice Fujisaki?
The suggestion that you had is fine. Thank you.
All right. Justice Hill?
Fine with me.
All right. Judge Hart?
Yeah, that's fine.
Mr. Roddy?
Okay with me.
All right. Ms. Wallen-Roman?
Yep, good with me.
All right. So I have it boiled down. And Ms. Cowan, if you could follow along and see if what mistakes I am making. It sounds like Judge Moorman put into BCP numbers the list that Mr. Wardlaw had at the top. So it would be
BCP-5, but incorporating, there's a trial court component down further, and I'm trying to find it. Anyway, including the trial court. BCP number 9, which is the self-help centers, but keeping it to the 19.1 million. Item 11, which is the insolvency of the SCF. And number 12, which is the operations for the for maintenance. And then there was the inflation adjustment piece that was item 13 that was not mentioned in Judge Mormon's list, and I don't know if that was intentional or not, I guess I should ask.
No, it wasn't. I would add it, and I will make a motion that this is the set, as you've described, that we move forward.
All right, and Ms. Cowan, did I get that right?
I got most of them, but I also thought that, and maybe John can correct me, I thought that John was including the HCRC one because that had something to do with Proposition 66. Is that not correct?
Yeah, and this is John. My suggestion is that we build a Prop 66 proposal that includes all entities associated with the Prop 66 workload, which would be the Superior Courts, the Courts of Appeal, and HCRC.
And then I had one more question. Did you also, I think Justice Hill asked about capital outlay, John. I wasn't sure if that
right.
was one that was on your list or not.
No,
yeah.
That one should go forward.
Yeah, as a placeholder, as we see what the returns look like, I think it's important for us to keep that as a priority, would be my suggestion.
But you're excuse me, this is Judge Mormon, but you're speaking to the capital outlay provision that's part of 12, not the capital outlay that's part of 2022.
I think
so.
You're talking about 2022.
Yeah, 2022. What? So just for clarity, the item number 12 is our facilities maintenance, basically maintaining the facilities we have now. Item number 22 is our cap outlay program, which is construction of new courthouses. And so to the extent that there is a potential for the administration to support bond sales in the future for additional courthouses, then keeping that on the radar as a placeholder, I think is important.
Okay, so this is Judge Mormon again.
Right,
so the way Mike Courtney described it was that 12 had five components, and the fifth component had to do with the placeholder for the priorities that we had set aside and were going to the council but never got there, and that he differentiated 2022.
So as I understand it, Judge, item number 12, which deals with the court facility operations and maintenance, lease space and deferred maintenance, those are basically keep the lights on activities with respect to courthouses that we currently have and have responsibility for maintenance of, which
right.
is different.
So,
yeah,
okay.
Go ahead.
No, I do understand that part, but he specifically described it as having five components and the fifth one being a capital outlay provision. I'm just scrolling through the text.
This is Mike Courtney. I may have merged number 12 and number 22 together. 22
okay.
is cap outlay, and that is separate, and that is based on the five-year plan, which the council
okay.
addressed previously.
All right, so this is Judge Mormon. Thank you for that clarification. And with that understanding, then I would include 22 in the list.
And one more point. This is John Wardlaw again.
Sorry, I was on mute. I'm on mute. Ms. Cowan, do you want to review the list? We have a motion from Judge Moorman. If Ms. Cowan, you could review it, and then I'm going to ask for a second.
Okay. Just really quick, the items that I have are 2105, Prop 66, courts in the Courts of Appeal, but adding trial courts, and then also kind of with that 2123, which would be HCRC related to Prop 66, then 2109 at the $19.1 million level, 2111, yes. 2112, 2113, and the placeholder capital outlay 2122.
Does that I have one question, Judge Rubin.
Yes, go ahead.
I believe the 2123 was something separate and apart from the Prop 66 because the Prop 66 incorporates and obviously may assist HCRC and the other projects, but the 2123 is a standalone request unrelated specifically to Prop 66. So I think that as John indicated, it may well benefit HCRC and the project, but I don't think that folding in 2123 into the Prop 66 is what we'd envisioned.
Well, let me ask that as a question. Mr. Wardlaw, it was my understanding that we were going to extract the Prop 66 components from all of those and make them into its own a new BCP that had components, not just a wholesale combination. Is that right, or did I miss that?
Yes, Judge Rubin, that's correct. The Prop 66 specific items would be combined.
Right.
Non-Prop 66 pieces would not be supported.
Right. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Thank you for that clarification. And thank you, Justice Hill, for getting that clarified. All right. Ms. Cowan, back to you. You want to run through it one more time?
Judge Rubin, if I might, just real quick, this is John again. On the cap outlay, the item number 22, my suggestion would be to support that. But at the May revise after that, let's see where we're at, and potentially that one goes by the wayside if things are not looking good at that point, would be my suggestion.
Yeah, well, my expectation is that the May revise or soon thereafter that we would feel free to axe any of them that we thought that one's coming in at almost $900 million. So it probably has the biggest target on its back, or $850 million. So, but yes, I think that's a great idea, but I would feel free to go after any of them or expand the list. And I think also we were going to, and I think it was, I can't remember, Ms. Wallen-Roman's suggestion, if I could suggest that we leave a placeholder for tech when it comes through again in May. Would that be okay, Judge Moorman?
Yes. Yes.
All right. Great. All right. Ms. Cowan, I really hate to do this to you again, but
it's okay.
Can you run down the list so the members can hear it, and then we'll see if we get a second, and we'll go from there.
Okay. So I've got 2105, which will be Proposition 66 components for the Courts of Appeal, the Trial Court, and HCRC. Then I've got 2109 at the $19.1 million level, 2111, 2112, 2113, and the placeholder of 2122, and then the thought that we would revisit or we would entertain the IT request after JCTT does their work. Does that sound right?
Yes, that's the motion. This is Judge Moorman.
All right, second. We have a motion. All right, Justice Hill, is that you?
It is.
All right, Justice Hill, second. Further discussions around the room. Judge Moorman.
I'll go last. Thank you.
All right. Well, Judge Bakke.
Nothing further. Thank you.
All right. Justice Fujisaki.
I will take 03 and 24 off, and I am in agreement. Thank you.
Thank you. Outstanding. And that doesn't mean we can't revisit them later, Justice Fujisaki, in May.
Well,
Right,
and it is with the hope and understanding that we might be able to revisit it later. Thank you.
Oh, absolutely we will. All right, Justice Hill.
And I would agree with Justice Fujisaki. Those items are critical, and hopefully in May or sometime thereafter we can move them forward. But I have nothing further to add.
Thank you. Judge Hott.
But with the understanding that we're going to go back and revisit all of this, I agree.
All right. Mr. Roddy.
I'm in agreement with the motion.
All right, Ms. This is about discussion. All right. Sounds like no further discussion from him. And Ms. Wallen-Roman.
Yes, I'm in agreement. Thank you.
All right. Let's vote. All those in favor of moving the list forward as described in Judge Moorman's motion, say aye.
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 Opposed? Abstentions? All right, it passes. Thank you all. This has not been an easy format to do this. You were all wonderful. Thank you so much. And now we are going to go to our closed session. So I need everyone to hang up and call back in on the closed line. And I will give you, take 5 minutes. So it's 11:38. Let's make it 11:45. We'll call back in 11:45 and start the closed session. Thank you all.
Thank you.